Hey everyone, before we get going today, I wanted to let you all know I'll be running another adult doubles camp in New York City the weekend before the US Open, August 24th and 25th. I had so much fun hosting my first camp in Charleston, I decided to add another one this year. Everyone in the camp will receive a premium gift bag with items from Vuori, New Balance, Yonex, and Swing Vision. The camp will be 8 hours on court working on your doubles positioning, shot selection, and tactics that you can use to outsmart your opponents and play to your strengths. Each player will also get personalized stroke reviews on any area of your game that's giving you issues, and then we also do match reviews through Swing Vision in the months leading up to the event. I want all the players in my camp to feel like I've been working with them for months, not just a weekend. If you're interested in more information, there's a link in the show notes where you'll fill out a short questionnaire, and then I can personally answer any other questions you might have. So whether you live in New York or you'll be traveling there for the Open, I hope to see some of you at my camp in New York this summer. Welcome to the 62nd episode of Baseline Intelligence, the podcast designed to make you a better tennis player and a smarter athlete. I'm your host, Jonathan Stokey. Today's guest is Jeff Greenwald. Jeff is one of the premier performance psychologists in the tennis world and is the author of the book, The Best Tennis of Your Life. On today's episode, we discuss how to handle nerves, taking your practice game to the match court, and the stats he wished he knew when he was playing. So sit back, relax, and prepare to become a smarter tennis player. All right, Jeff, welcome to the pod.
Great to be here, Jonathan. Thank you.
This is something, we'll get right to the good stuff right away. So whenever I have a sports psychologist, the mental side of the game, every player I've ever coached deals with nerves. And when I put up the Instagram questions, there were a lot of things. How do I play with nerves? How do I play looser? How do I handle it when I get tight? So I guess maybe to start off, I'm wondering if you can kind of, generally speaking, kind of describe why people get nervous when they're playing a recreational sport like tennis.
Because they're anxious that they're anxious. How about that?
It's pretty deep.
Let's kick it off right away, right? I mean, you know, Novak talks, everybody gets nervous. So does he. There's no match he's ever played that he didn't feel nervous and all that. And we can talk a good game. Everybody can just talk about their nerves. But when you're out there, when you feel those feelings, the feet slow down and your arm gets a little bit rubbery, or you double faulted once and you're scared it's going to happen again, and the retreating and trying not to miss, and you know, going into the future and worrying. So all of this anxiety of the anxiety is a big deal, because if you can cut that out, if players can really manage that and recognize, okay, accept it. And I mean, radically accept it. Do you want to be nervous? No. Does it feel good? Not at all. But like you really do have to have a new perspective on the experience of the nerves, of course, how you interpret it. And that's a big deal too. So there's a lot we can talk about here today, I know.
Yeah, I'm gonna open that up to you. I'm gonna use a golf example for me. When I played my first tournament, I mean, I can't tell you how nervous I was. But my feedback from the nerves was, I went, oh, I stand closer to the ball when I'm nervous. Oh, I don't turn as much on my backswing when I'm nervous. And so the next time I played a tournament, of course, I was terrified again. And I went, oh, remember last time, this is what happened. So I did the opposite. I stood farther from the ball. I tried to turn more than usual, and I hit a great drive, and I immediately relaxed. So is that something, kind of figuring out what those nerves do to you? Is that a good way to handle that?
I think that awareness is huge. And I love how you said you did the opposite. So, you know, that's really a great approach, because we do get conditioned into doing the same thing over and over. We back off. Usually that's the thing that players do, is get tentative. They try not to miss because they don't feel good. They don't feel like they're going to make it. I get it. But we have to stop avoiding that moment, and we have to release the ball. Because the more we do it, the more we back off, the safer we play, trying not to miss, we reinforce the fear, and we stay in this vicious cycle. But as soon as you are sort of coaching your brain, if you will, your brain's going, oh my God, oh no, don't miss. And you're like, yeah, no, I'm about something else here. I'm about releasing. I'm about playing for mastery. I'm in the driver's seat, not you, fear. Then you start to really make massive massive progress. I call it the upward spiral, you know, after that, because you've really sort of taken control of what you have control over, right? So
one thing I coach is, you know, people can't hit more winners on purpose. Like if they could, Novak would he'd be hitting more than 20% winners in a match. Like objectively, he just would. It's an easier way to win, but you can't force winners. And so a great way to improve, in my opinion, is you start reducing all the unforced errors you can make. You reduce double faults, you make more returns, you get more balls over the net, stop missing wide. And for me, I have no problem thinking of those things in a positive light. Like I'm going to hit higher over the net. I'm going to hit more middle. A lot of people, when I hear you talking about that tentative mindset, they get scared. They go, oh, I'm trying not to miss, and they decelerate. Is there a healthier way to communicate that or experience those thoughts?
Yeah. So what you're describing is the ability and willingness to focus on something else other than yourself. What happens is when we get anxious, when we get tight, our focus goes inward. And we are now extremely self-conscious and protecting. We have to do, as you were indicating earlier, the opposite. We have to get our attention onto tactic. We got to get it onto the target and commit to something that matters to you. So what I realized is that when I'm as committed to releasing the ball, being loose, being aggressive, moving the ball around, when I'm committed to that, regardless of the outcome, that is an incredibly different place to be. But the bottom line is you got to get your focus off yourself, because you find yourself in the web, in your own internal web, and you got to get your focus outside of yourself.
What would be the first step? So let's say a recreational player is out there, it's 5-all in the first set, and you know, we're not necessarily the thinker of our own thoughts, but it hits them like a ton of bricks and they go, man, I am tight. What is step one to handling that situation?
So if you've practiced the deep breathing, deep diaphragmatic breathing, like if the room was hot, helps cool the room, right? So if you really know how to breathe properly, breathing in through your nose, exhaling out through your mouth, Novak is the master. And you train that, you know, even a minute a day, but if you actually do it properly, breathing in, you could be a 4-count in, 1-second hold, 6-out. Everybody has, you know, different versions. It could be 4 and 4, you know, but the slower the exhale, the better, because that kicks in this parasympathetic nervous system, relaxes the body. So you that one deep breath, if you've done it a bit through the day, a couple times, and you do it properly, that breath is going to take you down from, call it a 10 tight or an 8. It's going to drop you down, you know, a peg or two. Right? So that's just a reset breath. It's not going to get rid of the nerves. People often think, oh, it didn't work. It's not going to get rid of them, but it's going to put you in the driver's seat. It's going to reset you. And now you've got a pivot point to refocus on something. So what do? You focus on the ball. You focus on your target. So you pick one thing to come back to. And it's the coming back that's so key. You know, if we're lost in the nerves, and I know it can really hijack us. It absolutely does. We have to pick something to refocus onto.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just such a difficult thing. And everyone has their own little outcome or outside force that kind of drives the nerves. And that's why it's probably interesting for you as a sports psychologist, because it's not the same exact thing every time. But how do expectations, either self-expectations or external expectations, kind of affect nerves? How do you see that working together?
Well, the expectations are probably, I'd almost put it at the number one, you know, slot in terms of the mistake players are making relative to their nerves. So you're going to win or lose. It's pretty, in tennis, right, there's no tie. So we know at the end of 2 hours-ish, there's going to be a winner or a loser. And that uncertainty, because the brain does not like uncertainty, so it's going to try to predict what's going to happen. You know, what are my chances today? Oh, they're a 7 UTR. I'm a 6.5. Or, you know, the whole UTR sort of negotiation, the terrorist negotiation. So, you know, that is where we also come up with the shoulds. I should win. I call it a 6-letter swear word. You know, because it is such a, there's nothing good that comes out of it, but the brain churns that out. I mean, think about, oh, you should beat him, or I should. So if you win, you get nothing out of that, sort of from that standpoint. And then you just put all the pressure on yourself if you don't meet those expectations. So the expectations you really want to have are about your commitment to really releasing through the ball. How loose were you? How intense were you? How focused were you? Did you on break point for the third time? Were you really willing to play with controlled aggression? Well, you know, what are you committed to? And that's really what you want to base your expectations on, rather than, am I going to beat this guy? And what are people going to say, of course, after?
I had a guy at Duke, and he had some anger issues, and, you know, he was losing to guys, but they were basically the same level. And so every metric wise, every UTR results, same spot in the lineups. And I said, okay, let's just say you guys are exactly the same level and you play 10 times. How many times do you think you'll win? And he said 6 or 7. And I was like, well, that's interesting, because that sounds like you're better than that guy then. You know, like he had this expectation that even though on paper he knew he's about the same, he expected to win essentially probably deep down almost every time. And so when he was losing, it was like, what is going on here? And that led to that frustration.
And the interesting thing, Jonathan, about that sort of mindset, whether it's, you know, inflating your own level or just not paying attention to the stats, which I'd like to talk about in a moment, but like the pros, when you hear them talking, of course, when they go on the court, they just want to get done with the interview, right? When they're on the, through the tunnel, they're like, okay, let me just go play. But whether before or after, you know, there's the best in the world don't talk about winning and losing as much as the people who are struggling with nerves, et cetera, and confidence. It's there's an inherent understanding among athletes who are who've played and succeeded that it is about mastery. And the truth is, it is about mastery for everybody. But there's this outcome problem that, you know, because of course you want to win, and losing is painful, and it's more painful than losing or winning is enjoyable, right? The pain of losing, right? It hurts. And we could get into that all day long about self-worth, being attached to the outcome. But I just think that the more players focus in on the mastery, on the expectations of what they have control over, obviously, how loose they are, the intensity, the focus, how they carry themselves, moving on from the last point. These are things that if you get really engaged with these factors, of course, the great irony is it leads to more winning anyway.
I would say I have high standards for myself and for my players. I expect you to have great effort. I expect you to have a good attitude. But in the last year or two as a coach, I've kind of adopted zero expectations. Like if a parent says, what do you think for the match? I always go, I have no idea. Like, guess what? We're going to find out in 2 hours, but I have no idea what's going to happen. They had a great practice. Great practices don't always lead to great matches, and poor practices don't lead to poor matches. So I've gotten to the point now where I have zero expectations. Is that a bad thing? Am I going too far overboard on that?
I ask players, let's look at it this way, Jonathan. Let's say you could know for the rest of your life, you're going to win. You go, here's a tournament coming up. You're going to lose 7-5 in the third set in the semifinals. You'll beat the guy in the quarters 7-6, 6-4. And you knew that ahead of time. How excited are you to go to play that tournament?
Yeah, not very.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think misinterpret the nerves. It's exciting. I mean, to not know, the brain doesn't like it at first blush. Like, oh, well, what's going to happen? I get it. But that's also the excitement of it. And if people could just be more willing to endure the not knowing, tolerate it, and go out and really focus on these specific intentions, as I call them, before you actually walk on the court. What are your two intentions? So you can come back to them. It's a different dimension of that you're playing from. It's a different dimension. And literally, it's like you're embodying a different space. You're not feeling the pressure like the same way. You know, you feel pressure still, but you're embracing it and you're focused more narrowly on what's going to help you play better. You're not hijacked and pulled in and out of the past and the future. It's a completely different place.
A few minutes ago, you mentioned stats that you wanted to get into. I want to make sure you give me those because I'm interested in that.
Well, sure. Yeah. And let me go back. You said about expectations, you know, is it too much? I mean, we can obviously go overboard with everything. Somebody listening could be like, oh, you know, the mastery process outcome debate, right? It's all about process. And I'm not saying, I just want to be clear. No, it's about outcome too. And it's about how are you showing up for all in the first set? You know, you got some nerves and, you know, are you backing off? Or are you stepping in and hitting the ball? So it gets very binary, very fast in this conversation, right? But outcome is, you know, to get into tournaments, you need the rankings and the ratings and the whole thing. Okay, great. That makes this exciting and challenging and painful. Now let's go focus on what matters. It's going to help you play better. Okay. So coming back to the stats, I mean, I swear to you, if somebody told me when I was 15 years old, and I was a perfectionist, I wanted to win every point. Yeah, I'm very competitive at ball at Terry's, duking it out on the back courts there. And that was like playing a tournament every day, actually. But if someone said to me, you're going to lose, Jeff, 45% of the points in every match you play, playing anybody, you know, around your level, minimum, and you can lose up to 50% and still win. And by the way, 45%, if you win 55, you're crushing them. Two sets, 6-3 and 3-3, 3-4 probably. I would have been like, what are you talking about? When I was 15 or so, actually I was 16, and I was at ball at Terry's, and I'm playing this guy in the finals, Chris Lapriore, good player from New England. I'm you know, 6-4, 6-3, I think he got me. But I would miss a shot, and I would just get so upset, so angry. Scream. And they actually said, you can't play in this Florida Tennis Association anymore. They kicked me out it was a week. Aaron Krickstein's sister, who was down there, said, Jeff, don't worry. We'll get, you know, you got to write a letter though. You got to write a letter and say you're sorry and you're going to fix it. And I did. And they let me play. I, you know, I said, I'm sorry. I take responsibility. And I got better. I was very competitive. I wanted to win. I hated missing the easy rally ball. But if someone said, I had no idea that I could lose that amount of points. Now, it's intellectual, I get it. But I think I would have absorbed that. And when I missed, you only lose 1 point for that. I would have thrown it in the 45-50% bucket. And why put it in the 7% bucket you're fighting for? And Craig O'Shaughnessy, who we did a course together called Getting Tight, actually. And you know, he's been fantastic with helping, you know, players figure out how to think better about their practices and matches relative to the stats, of course.
I want to make sure. So if I got this wrong, I'm giving you credit for it. I'm pretty sure in that course, Getting Tight, you had the idea of permission slips.
Yes.
And I have loved that one forever because for me, I'm about as robotic as it gets as a emotion, you know, human being. And so I'm like, oh, okay, well, have I ever played a match where I haven't missed 15 to 20 forehands? Like, of course I do it every time. I'm going to try to make everyone, but I know just based on the history of the tennis world, everybody does that. So why would I get mad when I've missed my fifth forehand? Can you kind of explain that permission slip idea?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I know how that feels, of course, right? When you know, you might feel a little nerves or you go for something, you're kind of debating whether you should, but you do, and you miss. And it's super tempting on the next point to hold back, right? You don't want to give another free point away. It's kind of feels like a sin, doesn't it? To give another free point. They're just, you know, serve, you miss. But what I have found is that if you can, again, tolerate that moment and not let your brain direct traffic, so to speak, if you can let your brain, oh, okay, time to, you know, buckle up here and just get the ball back. And step in again and commit. Maybe you need a little more top. You know, you got to go to the big target, not go as close to the line. Sure, great. You know, go have a little shape on the ball, but you're releasing the ball. You're not holding back and you're really willing. And that's really the operative word here is you're willing. So the permission slip is you're really giving yourself that permission because you're going to be paid back dividends. If you can stay the course there, you find that you get past that rough patch of like make it, miss out, you know, should I, and all that tug of war that's going on inside, it really cuts that stuff out and it becomes a lot cleaner and more, you can be more decisive with this whole thing. So yeah, the permission slips are huge. Permission to miss, as I call it in my book, I think has been a big, big, you know, helpful concept for people.
So alongside with nerves, and it's probably a big reason for this, but a lot of players also say they play so much better in practice. Oh, I was hitting great, but then I'm not playing matches at the same level. What are your thoughts on that? Are nerves the main reason for that level drop?
So two things on that, well, a few, but one is I don't think in particular player, you know, younger players, arguably even good league, competitive league, senior players, but I think it gets better in terms of their intensity in practice. I think that intensity of practice, the quality of practice is important. I think kids, and I see it all over, the sort of this a little lackadaisical, little unfocused, certainly the intensity is too low. And the experience when you play a tournament match or you go into a tournament is so radically different. You know, you've been kind of mailing in. Okay, if you want to beat a guy in practice and it's you're in a breaker, you want to win, and that bragging rights or whatever it is, their ego, that can up it. But if you've been in clinics and you're playing, you really haven't been playing enough sets, for example, which I think is probably another issue. But I think the disparity in that feeling is too wide. And so that we got to close that gap. One being players need to be more intense, visualizing themselves, you know, on the court in the tournament coming up. For example, before I play the men's 40 nationals still and played 17 years now, I'm 57, but I still love going down. I was in the quarters this year, still was able to hang in there a little bit, but you know, I'll visualize myself on that front court. I'll visualize my, you know, in my mind before a return, you know, a week before hitting a backhand down the line or take, you know, picturing people there watching, and I'll recreate the experience in my mind a little bit just to add some reality to it. So when I'm actually there, it's not feeling so foreign.
My best year as a junior was my second year, 18. And my coach, Billy Stearns, who it was the most I improved in a year. It was phenomenal. And if I was in practice playing a point, and let's say I missed a backhand wide, immediate two court suicide. And number one, like I'm tired, so I don't want to do that. And I felt this pressure and this intensity. And I used to love going to tournaments because I was like, if I miss, it's just a point. Oh my God, this is great. Now I get to relax for 25 seconds. And so I felt so free. Mm-hmm. And I was in good shape. Like it was almost less of a punishment. It didn't stop me from being disciplined, but I almost felt more relaxed in a tournament than I did in a practice.
I love that. I love that. That's amazing. And so did you feel like in the tournaments you thrived, you know, you felt competitive and you didn't get as hijacked maybe by the nerves that you could have been?
Yeah, I felt excited. I obviously felt like I was in great shape because I had done a lot of running in practice, but at the end of the day, I was like, man, in practice, I lose plus running, plus maybe he screams at me, plus all this. And then I go in a match. I just lost a point. And as long as it wasn't match point, I'm good to go, you know? And I wanted to keep winning so that I didn't have to go back and practice. So like, it wasn't like my competitive drive wasn't strong. I just felt great. And in a way felt more relaxed than when I was maybe 12 or 14, which was, I would go to a tournament and I couldn't eat. You know, I was so nervous for these things.
Right. No, that's a great point. Great example. And I think, Jonathan, that like, you know, again, coming back, and I think so important, it's easier said than done, of course, but when players are going into tournaments and they feel this, the nerves, they feel the, you know, and their dad, mom's driving them or you're driving yourself to the courts and you want to beat this player and people know you're playing that player and you know, they're going to say, oh, how'd you lose to them? Or, you know, I said, the first question you typically get is what, when you get off the court, how'd you do? Did you win? Right. I mean, we've been conditioned, brainwashed for years. So that's what in our, you know, the first thought is, oh, you know, this is big. I need to come off the court, be able to say, oh, I won kind of deal. But I think this interpretation of the feeling is important, is really important. Like it's normal. It'll gradually go away. you have your intentions, you're excited to play, excited to compete. You got the adrenaline, absolutely. But you're not going to have that energy be all stopped up in you because you're scared to miss and going to hold back and hope to win and all this stuff. It's a terrible, terrible downward spiral. So it's normal. I'm excited to play. I'm going to focus and prioritize my intentions going in. So you reroute your brain when it starts to veer into, oh no, and these nerves, and I hate this feeling. And you're just not in the driver's seat. And that's what players need to fix.
I had a coach explain to me, he said to the group of kids, he said, would you be happy if you won 0-0 in your next tournament match? And they said, yeah, I'd be happy. And he was like, oh, well, that's awesome. You know what I can do? We were practicing next to the 5-year-old clinic. He's like, I'll draw them up first round. You'll beat them 0-0. And everyone was like, well, I don't want to do that. That's boring. And so he was like, oh, okay, well, yeah. So deep down, you kind of like the struggle, number one. And number two, if you want to play someone your level, what are the odds you're actually going to beat that person 0-0 if you're actually supposed to be competitive? So he was kind of reframing it like, even though you kind of don't want it to be a challenging match, deep down, you kind of do.
Exactly. And I think deep down, as we were talking earlier, you know, you said that we're starting out deep on the beginning, anxiety of the anxiety, right? Which it is. People don't think of that part, but that's the layer where I'm saying, let's remove that. Let's deal with the feeling. Okay. But not the feeling of the feeling. I mean, we get right anxiety. So yeah, I just think that the way we interpret this stuff and is crucial. And being loose, by the way, is something you can bake into your game. So this is the other thing. Players typically, you know, the classic is you tell yourself to relax, go for your shots. And usually players do the opposite. So why do you have to command yourself to do something that normally you do in practice anyway, mostly? Now you're telling yourself to do the thing you're already supposed to be doing. Yeah. So it's just a kind of a, and of course, Tim Galway in the Inner Game of Tennis captured this sort of voice of this command and control voice. But being loose is not a thought. It's a feeling at the end of the day. And it's happening on contact, period. When you're loose, your hand and your shoulder are releasing that ball or it's not. And you could be somewhere on the dial. I use a dial 1 to 10. 10 is as tight as you've ever played. And 1, you'd never want to play at a 1, right? But I found that about a 4 or 5, your grip a little bit loose, you know, shoulder, you're not bracing on contact. You're letting that wrist go through the contact. Getting familiar with that feeling as you're hitting it, you're not judging it and like, oh no, you're just noticing. You're aware of the feeling of loose. And you can bake it into your game day after day. 10 minutes, loose, and then go up. I have people go up the dial tighter and tighter and then dropping the tension. So they're intentionally getting tight, hitting the ball. Okay, I'll take them 6. Okay, show me a 7. Show me an 8. And then I'll take them back down the dial. 6. Show me 6. Tell me, give me a 4. Give me a 2. And then I bring them up. I say, well, how was that? And I go, oh, it was different. I'll say, how did you get rid of that tension? I just did. I just let it go. I didn't. Did you tell yourself? No. You just let it drop. And then that feeling becomes more associated with your swing and it becomes more the norm and you can kind of calibrate better in matches. So again, it's a feeling, it's a physical feeling as opposed to a thought about being loose.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up with Instagram questions. First one, which is a huge one. This person wanted to know, how do you build confidence and believe in yourself?
You build confidence by having unconditional confidence, because when confidence is based on just outcomes, which it typically is, you beat that player and, you know, you played well and beat them, and of course you get confidence when you beat somebody better. So that's a given. And if you played well, you're going to get more confident. But the confidence that we have control over is you can make adjustments. You know that you can release on the ball, as we're talking about, even when you're a little nervous. That you can refocus. If your focus isn't great, you can refocus on the task at hand and raise your intensity because you're aware that your intensity is too low and you start moving your feet. So being able to adjust and control these things gives you, a great deal of confidence, because it's not subject to just, did you win or lose? And did you play well this day and or not? So that's where you want to put your attention on all the things we're talking about here today. And really train some of this stuff, practice it. Yeah. Just playing one point at a time, sticking to those intentions.
And this is the hardest question. So buckle up. You only get one, no cheating. What is your single best advice for the 4-0 player? Actually, if you want to give me two, we have time for two. if you have to.
The first would be that 4 and that 0, that 4.0. See if you can transcend that for 2 hours or the night before. And can you actually orient to the game itself, to the experience itself? Focus on what matters to you, what you've been practicing, what you have confidence in with your patterns, playing on more on your terms. Be clear about that. And try to move past the 4.0, 4.2, 4.5, 3.823. These numbers will become irrelevant one day. But I mean, it's wonderful to have goals, but the putting people on a pedestal because they're they beat a 4.0, a good 4.0 versus a medium 4.0, like the ratings and the rankings and the score are obvious obstacles that you need to really put to the side and come back to your index card with your two intentions of how do you want to play today? What's important to you in addition to getting the W and trying not to get the L? Like, let's get past that. And then the second piece of advice, when you miss, it's okay. And you don't need to analyze it. You don't need to analyze every time you miss. I mean, walk away from it. Walk away from the train. What you think is a train wreck is a little bump in the, is nothing. It's nothing. You know, if every pilot, when they hit a little pocket of turbulence, freaked out, and that plane, I don't know if they keep it up as much as they do, but just try to be more even keeled emotionally. So you're not going in your head upstairs in the attic, trying to solve for everything when you miss a forehand, and half of them are probably good misses anyway. And your best tennis lies just beyond that forehand that you would have just analyzed the crap out of. Your best tennis is right behind that, if you allow it.
I know you got to run, but I want to sneak this in. We mentioned a couple of things, but where can people find your website, your work, and the book that you wrote?
So fearlesstennis.com will get people there. We get a free newsletter. They can look in my course. Fearless Tennis Platinum is there. Soon to be able to get, Getting Tight, you can get there as well in about a week or so there. But either way, I love to provide new, fresh content. I'm going to have a subscription option coming up where people get audios on the go. People can write in, say, hey, Jeff, I need an audio for this or that, and I'm going to create that for them. And they'll get the courses and all the audios as, for a subscription, which is coming up in the next probably 3 weeks. So
absolutely amazing. You gave me a ton of things that I'm going to chew on tonight and think about. Hopefully the listeners out there got a ton out of this. Like I said, the mental side of the game is so massive. And like you said, the mastery, once you can figure it out, not only will you enjoy it more, but you'll play better. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's been great to be with you, Jonathan. Thank you so much. Great questions. Great anecdotes too. Loved it.
All right. I want to thank Jeff for coming on the show. If you liked this episode, just a reminder, there's an additional bonus episode with Jeff that I've already released. So you can subscribe for a free trial if you want more from him. Obviously, handling nerves is something every player struggles with, but my favorite thing he said was actually one of his last things, which he said, it's okay to miss. We don't have to analyze every shot. Missing is part of the game. Federer missed. Nadal missed. Agassi missed. It wasn't due to some crazy technical flaw every time. They just moved on, and you can do the same. Thanks again for listening, and a quick reminder that the link for my New York City camp is in the show notes, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with Emma Doyle.